Coming to you from Cincinnati's Computer Cooperative Studios, you're listening to Hemp Rock Radio on WVQC LP Cincinnati 95.7 FM. Speaking for the legalization of marijuana. WVQCLP, as a community radio station, serves only to open its airwaves to responsible, divergent points of view. WVQCLP does not endorse any political campaign or candidates. The opinions expressed on Hemp Rock Radio do not reflect the views of WVQCLP, Media Bridges, its staff, or Board of Trustees. The opinions expressed reflect the views of Hemp Rock and our guests. Thanks for listening. Welcome, Hemp Rockers, to Radio Free Queen City and the Monday edition of Hemp Rock Radio with the happy Hemptress and joint hosts, the Burn Man and the Dope Boy Pot and Hash, featuring the Pottsbury Bakery and Hemp Rock Cafe on WVQC LP 95.7 FM, the voice of the Queen City.
WVQC.com/95.7 is online at WVQC.org. Hemp Rock is at HempRock.com, and the Hemp Rock Hemp Line is at 513-684-HEMP. That's 513-684-HEMP.
To talk to us during the show, call 513-564-9600. That's 513-564-9600.
And now, here's Hemp Rock Radio with all things hemp, marijuana, the drug war, and more, including guests, music, news, food, and lots of fun here on 95.7 FM WVQC LP, low power to the people.
Despite a decades-long drug war, billions of dollars spent, and millions of Americans locked up in prisons, drug use rates have remained relatively constant. Any economist will tell you that as long as there's demand, there will always be entrepreneurs with a supply ready to make a profit. When a drug dealer is busted, it's nothing more than a job opening for someone else to fill. This is Economics 101. Join Students for Sensible Drug Policy to help teach lawmakers this simple economics lesson. Visit www.schoolsnotprisons.com to find out more information about SSDP, if there's a chapter at your school, or how to start one. It's time to join the growing opposition to our country's failed war on drugs and start an open, honest, and rational discussion of alternative solutions to our nation's drug problems.
Hi, I'm with the War on Drugs.
And I'm with LEAP. Hey, I see you let that one get away.
Get away? What?
You let Michael Phelps go.
Ah, oh, he's such a nice fella. But we're going after those other scum, though.
Ah, yes. The wrong crowd we've heard so much about.
Those bastards just sitting there doing drugs.
Doesn't justice demand equal treatment under the law?
Well, yeah, but, I mean, how would it look, given the prison sentence or even probation to an Olympic gold medalist?
Yeah, what harm was he doing?
Right. I mean, well, he was hanging out with drug dealers, that's what he was doing.
Throw the book at him.
I can't.
Throw the book at them.
Now you're talking. Send our kids a message.
Yeah, swim faster.
We are the Drug Policy Alliance. We envision new drug policies grounded in science, compassion, health, and human rights.
I support the Drug Policy Alliance because it fosters debate on drug policy.
Because the war on drugs represents an extraordinary violation of human rights.
Because whether you use drugs or not, you deserve to be treated with respect, kindness, and dignity.
I support the Drug Policy Alliance because I'm a scientist.
Because the United States has the highest incarceration rate in the world.
We believe the war on drugs is really a war on people.
I support the Drug Policy Alliance because I want my children to receive honest drug education.
Because it's time to step out of our comfort zone and begin to tell the truth about drugs and our failed drug policies.
Because the war on drugs is a war on people of color.
The Drug Policy Alliance promotes harm reduction.
Because the drug problem is a health problem, not a criminal problem.
We promote new solutions to reduce the harms of both drug use and drug prohibition.
I support the Drug Policy Alliance because I believe in the right to sovereignty over one's own mind and body.
Because so many people are incarcerated.
I know. I spent 12 years in prison because of a first-time nonviolent drug offense.
Because I believe in personal freedom and personal choice.
Because the drug war
isn't that the war on drugs, it's
the war on people. I'm Tony Papa.
I'm George Soros.
I'm Sting, and I am the Drug Policy Alliance.
I'm Larice Harvey.
I am Dr. Matilda Krim.
I'm Elizabeth Sarnoff.
I'm Montel Williams.
And I am the Drug Policy Alliance.
I am the Drug Policy Alliance.
I am the Drug Policy Alliance.
And I am the Drug Policy Alliance.
We are the Drug Policy Alliance. Online at drugpolicy.org. Please join us.
Hey, man, check this out, man. Got the Hemp for Victory CD, man.
Rake it up,
rake it up,
tear it down,
tear it down,
or rake it up, tear it down, weed it out, it's all around. Oh yeah,
oh yeah,
oh yeah. H-E-M-P.
You can twist it in a rope in your backyard for free.
That's not all you can twist it into.
So grab your stems,
grab your stems,
grab your grass,
grab your grass.
So grab your stems, grab your grass, grab your leaves.
Backyard for free.
You can refine it on the corner.
Get into a hat in your backyard for free.
That's right, a party hat.
You can cook it into brownies in your kitchen for free.
WVQC, People Powered Radio.
Hi, we're Cheech and Chong, and you're listening to Hemp Rock Radio on Radio Free Queens City,
WVQC.org, Cincinnati's
95.7
FM.
All right, if you just tuned in, of course, it is Hemp Rock Radio and WVQC LP Cincinnati. And, of course, I am the Happy Hemptress, and I am flying solo. I'm flowing with the curb, too. And anyway, it is, as I said, Hemp Rock Radio, and I do have a very, very special guest on the phone today. And but I do have to tell you real quick, though, that the song that you just heard, of course, was from the Hemp for Victory CD, and that is from the early 90s, put out by a bunch of bands in the Washington State area, of course, in honor of Jack Hare. And of course, we are celebrating Jack Hare today. Saturday would have been his 72nd birthday, and we love him and adore him here, and that's what today is about. And we have, of course, a special friend and guest of Jack Hare's on today, and so we're going to move forward right into that. And he is our special guest today, as well as next Monday, discussing Jack and hemp and all things about Jack and Hemp, as well as who he is. Now, I'm going to give you a quick introduction of who this gentleman is. I want you to understand, first of all, that separate entirely from Jack and the hemp community and all the folks that want to end this drug war, not only on people and other stuff, but the flower hemp. And besides that, I love and adore this gentleman, and I'm very, very pleased for him to be our guest today. And I want you to know who he is. He is, of course, George Clayton Johnson. He is one of the best friends of Jack Hare, of course, and one of the folks that I have, watched the works of and enjoyed and can honestly say helped shape my life along with Jack Hare, but much longer. I didn't know who Jack Hare was until 1990-91, and I've known who this gentleman is since I was a kid, and I want to thank George for coming on today. George, are you there?
Indeed I am.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us today, not only to celebrate Jack's birthday and his life, but just to be a part of what I do, which I can assure you would not be happening if it wasn't for some of the works that you have done and folks like yourself. Let me tell you who George is. George Clayton Johnson is one of the writers that is well known for 8 episodes of Twilight Zone. He was the writer of the second TV movie premiere called The Man Trap, Star Trek genre of the television series, as well as numerous other works in television. And specifically, he is known for, of course, being the co-author of the original book Ocean's 11 and also Logan's Run. And we'll be talking to him more about all of his work probably today as well, but mostly next week, because today we're going to focus on Jack. But there are good things coming out of what George is doing, and we'll talk more about that. I don't know if I'm allowed to give an exclusive yet. We'll find out. But George, again, thank you for joining us here at Hemp Rock Radio. Of course, we are out of Cincinnati, Ohio. It's been some time since I've seen you, since I was able to hang out with Jack a few years ago and be able to hang out with you in L.A. Tell us how you're doing today.
Well, I am doing very well.
Wonderful.
I am beginning to peak, as they say in the business. The novel that I co-wrote with William F. Nolan, Logan's Run, is being remade, I learn.
Fantastic.
They're talking, you know, a couple hundred millions of dollars. That's what it costs these days to make a Green Lantern or something like that.
Yes.
You know, something that's extravagant. And so now the word is out that the Silver Company is working in conjunction with Warner Brothers to do a remake of the movie Logan's Run. Interesting thing about that is that the novel Logan's Run, on which everything is based,
yes,
is quite different in many really significant ways from the movie.
Yeah.
And it has always been my prayer that they might make the movie going back to the book to see if they could translate the book to film, you know, which is like a specialty of mine. I've worked all of my life between literature, the printed word, and cinema, the image.
Yes.
You know? And I've learned how to work and talk in both languages. And so I am often really surprised when people won't believe me when I say to them, you know, Logan's Run, in spite of the fact that I wrote it, is one of the really significant things that reminds us that the government is evil.
Yeah.
If not intentionally, it's it, and one thinks it is. You know, that it reminds us that it's man versus the technological future, the society, the mores, what people want, what people expect. And I grew up here in a world in which everyone was being systematically dumbed down. Just systematically, on every level. The school systems were making things trivial, breaking up their concentration time by ringing the school bell every 30 minutes. And the whole system, the way that what is a holy calling to be a teacher has been turned into a job.
Yeah.
You know, what I curse in this whole society we live in is this concept of earning a living, a job. There's no reason why everybody shouldn't get a share of the gross national ripoff. There's no reason for that. We live in a country in which you get to keep everything you steal fair and square, right?
Right.
This is a frontier, raw, new country. Yeah. Less than 200 years old.
Yeah.
You know, so... So now, what are we making of it? A lockstep world in which 85% of everything that everybody knows is utter crap.
Yeah.
And in the midst of it is like this hemp thing. How could anyone in the universe spend 20 minutes looking into this situation with hemp and not realize it's one of our most valuable commodities? That it is everything. It is food. It is shelter. It is raiment. It is all of our essentials. You wouldn't have to earn a living if hemp was in the saddle. And because it doesn't cost a lot to grow hemp. Some of the dumbest people I know turn out some of the best weed you can imagine. You know?
This is true.
Well, anyway, back to my friend Jack Harris, since that's the subject here.
Well, you know, that is the subject, and this is the issue, though, is the hemp, and why you know this information. So tell us, how long have you known Jack yourself personally?
I am not good with numbers, I have to confess. When my wife asks me what day it is, I rarely know. I rarely know. Because I am not a product of the school system, I was an early dropout. I dropped out completely in the eighth grade. I failed the sixth grade and had to take it twice.
Wow.
You know, the very things that I had going for me was like curiosity were the things that made me incorrigible.
Yeah.
You know, why couldn't I let a sentence, a teacher finish a paragraph? Because, my God, she just opens my eyes and I want to know more about that. You know, up goes the hand.
Exactly.
You know, and in the course of that, I break the system down. I mean, that is to say, I violate the rules.
Yeah.
And how it's done. So when people come up to me and ask me how it's done, you know, I say you're doomed to failure if you learn how it's done.
Yeah.
You'll stand in line forever, waiting for your chance, because you learned how to apply for a job, which means how to get in line.
Right.
How to follow the leader, how to put up your hand before you're spoken to. A whole bunch of insane rules that have been promulgated systematically into a society in which, well, for example, just take this hemp thing again. Here's a plant, been here since time immemorial. It's mentioned 8,000 years ago in what are called the Shen Nung pharmaceutical, you know, pharmacopoeia is the word they use. And in there, hemp is famous for being an expectorant. If you got to cough some crap up out of your lungs, take a couple of good hits of good weed. The better it is, the more it will make you cough. The more you cough, the more you will save your system from laboriously trying to deal with all that phlegm.
Yeah.
And you can walk away newly invigorated. You start to receive greater amounts of oxygen into your brain. Now, here we are talking about fiber. This stuff is incredible.
Yeah.
It's more absorbent than cotton. And everybody knows that cotton is what's been killing our rivers and streams, all the chemicals we have to put on it.
Yes.
But now, or take the seed. Here's it. Let me just talk for a moment about the seed.
Okay.
It's a pure protein. It's got like 27 or some amino acids, in which it only takes 9 of them to make a nourishing protein.
Yes.
And it's got them all. It's got vitamin B5. Who's ever heard of that? It's a substantial food source. 80% of a plant is seed if it is grown for seed.
Yes.
And given the space to do its trip. If it's grown for seed, well, we've got this thing called hunger. It's everywhere. Every damn nation totally polluted.
Yeah.
Totally polluted because they cannot feed their population. And the foods that they do give them have been so denatured. Good God, how much does corn split into before it gets to you?
Yeah.
It's an oil, it's a this, it's a that, you know.
Corn syrup.
You don't see any real corn unless you go into the produce department.
And that's not really real either unless it's organic.
Isn't it a damn shame? I mean, on every level, everybody knows all of the wrong things.
Yeah.
The society is completely upside down.
Yeah.
A guy like Ron Paul talks about freedom. You know, get rid of this bureau. Get rid of that control system. Get rid of this control system. Well, my God, you're tearing across the fabric of America. No, you're tearing off your goddamn chains so that you can get to this thing called freedom. Nobody knows what freedom is. I find myself interpreting it in terms of property rights.
Yes.
You know, I own my brain. No question about that. I own my body.
Yes.
I have to take care of it, you know.
Yeah.
So these things that I own are property. And I own the product of my mind, and that's property. I end up making a living by selling that property, you know, but the product of my time or my thought.
And what a great product that is.
I thank you for saying that. I thank you very much for saying that. I know, I don't want to sound like a radical crazy guy. I'm 81 years old, almost 82.
In July.
My mm-hmm. oldest boy is 56.
Wow.
My youngest girl is 51.
My age.
I've
just turned
52. I've been with 52. My wife for 57, going on 58 years.
Great
I
man.
I own my own home. I don't have any debts. I don't own a credit card. I don't try to buy things on credit. If I can't afford it, I don't buy it. I have the mentality. I have a very frugal mentality. When I was at that stage, when you learn how to want toys and tools and clothing and furniture and stuff, I was asleep. I mean, I was too poor to think in those terms. So I never learned how to create a desire to buy the next version of Xbox or whatever. It just never occurred to me to even think of it. So, but the point is that I grew up in a working class family, subnormal. I grew up amongst a bunch of really stupid people, most of whom were drunks. Most of them, the drinking was not because they wanted to get drunk, it's because they were too bored to know anything else to do, and there was a strong hustle to sell the damn stuff. So
right.
they would just succumb to it. Being turned into sheep, they became very docile. Nobody asked any questions. I see the young people today, I don't see any curiosity about anything. I look at the news and I think, those people who work there in the news, aren't they curious why that person was gunned down at 3 o'clock in the goddamn morning? You know?
Yeah.
No, just tell he was gunned down 3 o'clock in the morning, move on to the next item.
Yeah.
No, isn't there some curiosity about the drama involved in that thing that happened?
No,
none at all. At least not in the hands of the people who have the jobs. And that's why I hate jobs, because my calling is writing. Writing.
Yes.
My job is writing TV, because that's about the only place I can make any serious money unless I have a hit book. You know?
Yeah.
But fortunately for me, there are enough random guys out there in TV making things that are good, so that I wouldn't be ashamed to have my name on them, because they are not dumb and repetitive. I mean, God Almighty, go through that little list. It starts with Law and Order. It has Without a Trace. It has Criminal Minds. It has it's about 8 tentacles. They're all produced by one or two guys.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Wolf, Dick Wolf.
Yep.
And the other guy, I can't think of
Jerry,
his name.
Jerry Bruckner.
Yeah,
Jerry
yeah.
Bruckheimer. Bruckheimer.
Yeah. So now, and they're all replicated. I mean, you win with this show, so you do one in Los Angeles, and one in South, you know, San, whatever, whatever. But I look at this stuff and I think it's entertaining. God, it's slickly produced.
Very.
God, you can't question anything about it. It's totally magnetic. Some of the casting is so brilliant. The way those people work together as a team, as a family, you want to watch it. I watch it.
Yeah,
I'm. You know, I am not pure at heart completely. I watch that crap because I saw it all before on Quincy.
Yeah,
forensic medicine and how it can apply in the in the solving of crime.
Yeah,
I didn't know there were that many serial killers in this country until I started watching those shows.
The only nice thing that we can say about some of these shows is that they actually do support our movement and have various shows exposing what the drug war is creating.
See, I'm not faulting the people who are doing it. God,
sure.
They're brilliant.
Absolutely.
They absolutely fascinate me. I wish they were given the opportunity to write something original, something that was fresh, something I hadn't heard 17 times before.
Yep.
Because every idea, every concept, I quickly grow bored on the curiosity factor because I know how the story's going to go.
Sure.
Every house is exactly the same.
You know, I think
somebody comes in with an earache and, God, stage one.
Yeah.
God, it's got to hospitalize him. Stage two. God, what we gave him is causing him the cramps. Stage three. Oh, my God, they're just about to four. And then the final stage is when House says, well, give him an aspirin. Yeah. Tell him to call us in 2 days.
Yeah, I think that's one of the reasons why I've always been such a big fan of sci-fi, although there are some sci-fi, as you know, that have predictable endings and you always know what's going to happen. But my son, who's 33, always teases me because I like to watch the silly sci-fis, the old B-movies. We were watching Planet of the Vampires last night.
With me too. I watched it. Wasn't it pretty?
It's wonderful.
It had such pretty backgrounds.
Yes.
And those costumes were straight out of Buck Rogers. You know?
Yes. And
I love it.
That's fun because we know what's going to happen, but that's the fun of it.
Sure, it's kid stuff.
Right.
But we're all kids at heart.
And that's why I like it, because it takes me back to being 12 years old, staying up all night long watching sci-fi.
That's why I love the comics. And
yes.
I've been a lifetime member of the Comic-Con.
Wow.
You know, it's just that I learned how to think.
Yeah.
How to visualize by learning how to read a Popeye comic strip or something.
Yeah.
You know, my absolute favorite, I guess, person in that whole world is Daffy Duck, who says...
Yeah.
Nobody tells this little black duck what to do.
A little metaphor
think, oh,
there.
God, what a cry of courage that is. How many people in the world dare to say that?
Yeah.
It's so exhilarating now that I'm getting to be an elderly gentleman to sometimes enter into rooms where nobody outranks me. God, what a wonderful concept to know there's nobody in here whose authority, position, or what have you.
Yeah.
And I notice how many people have provisional self-esteem. As long as they sit in that office, they have self-esteem.
Yeah.
The minute they're fired or they get sick or have to go home, they're just another schlub on the goddamn street.
Yeah.
Their name means nothing.
Right.
They've taken away their identity by giving them a middle initial. Everybody now is a middle initial.
Yeah.
God, I don't know who this Johnson George C. is. I've been so busy trying to make a person out of my total self, my name, everything. You know, my mom called me that. That's why I insist on it. Why are you being obstreperous? You know, it's just for identification.
Right.
No, it's for identity. I want to be a person. And I can be a person if I let the left brain, you know, get into the, or the right brain, I guess it is, the creative one, get into the game, which I equate with my left eye. Here's an interesting thing to your viewers or listeners. Try looking in the mirror, into your own eyes, and ask yourself the question, which one of those two eyes is really paying attention? Which one is really looking at me?
Hmm.
And it'll shift back and forth and look at them to see, yeah, this one here has got an intention about it. That one over there is sort of half asleep and thinking about something else. And you can see that in yourself. So I began quickly to identify the fact that I'm a left-eyed person.
Hmm.
The
which
more
means...
my left eye is alert, the more my right brain, which is the... Not the brain that, I don't know what it is. I see, because I tend to be a generalist. I tend to want to sum things up in a bumper sticker. Oh, I thought of a great one yesterday. I wrote it down. You get beat down getting to the top.
Yeah.
So, back to the subject, hemp. Hemp, the seed.
Yes.
Dr. Roberta Hamilton was an expert on oils, seed oils. She met Jack Herer, Jack told me about it, at a rally or someplace where she was supporting hemp. And she didn't, or she was at a, actually speaking at a nearby thing and happened to see the symposium was going on and dropped into it. And Jack was one of the guests, or was the guest, and he was telling her things. And she knew that hemp oil contained the greatest number of those hyper
amino acids.
Acids, you know, the
amino acids.
EFAs, essential fatty acids.
And the
linolenic and linoleic acids.
Mm-hmm.
But
the omegas.
She knew all of this, but she didn't know that hemp was pot. She did not know that hemp was marijuana. They had succeeded in demonizing hemp by not even naming it, by calling it something else.
Yep.
They called it marijuana, and now that's a demon thing, because if they would have called it hemp, every elder citizen would have said, my God, we raised hemp in Kentucky. It was a major staple, and there would be no Kentucky if there had been no hemp.
That's right.
Just as Jack says, hemp will be in the future, or there will be no future.
Well, you know, one of the things that I've been working on and finally put out as a T-shirt artwork this year is, although my friend, the artist, altered it just a little bit, and instead of the reefer roach, It's the Reefer Roach and Reefer Girl, and they're being in the picture the American Gothic, except that instead of the farm behind them, it's a field of hemp. And up on the, over the right side is a mushroom, and on the over the heart is the mushroom cloud, the alpha and the omega is what that represents for me. But the caption is pot is like roaches. It was here before man and will be here after man.
Yeah, that's insightful. It's just beautiful.
Thank you.
And American Gothic is truly, that's us.
Yes.
That really, we cannot look at that image of that farmer standing there with the pitchfork and his stern-faced wife, both of them trying to look it's presentable.
Yes.
There's such an inward look about both of them that lets you know that they're totally self-conscious.
Yeah.
To be posing for this picture.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to hemp again and this damned seed. Now, this thing called hunger around the globe, if it wasn't a question of jobs and money, but it was just a question of what are we going to do? Let's do the right thing. We could, well, just to give a mental concept, just because my mind works this way, Oregon, with its trees, puts out enough oxygen for the entire world.
Yeah.
That we don't need all those other trees in order to get enough oxygen. Well, we can get along without this goddamn hemp. But Jesus, you know, isn't it nice to know that every continent is growing oxygen for us, that your backyard is growing oxygen, and how much we need it as an absolute essential? But now you look at hemp and you think food, fiber, fuel, medicine, energy. We really need energy. We're going to be drinking a lot of energy. And there's hemp. And then how biodegradable this damn stuff is.
Yeah.
How it can be turned into tech fuels for four of the big tankers that go up and down the freeways, you know. This transportation thing is so critical to us. And the answer is in hemp. And Jack Herer, God bless him,
yes,
to answer an earlier question, I don't know much about numbers. I really blur out on numbers. But I guess I've known him over 30 years.
Yeah.
I met him through Captain Ed, Captain Ed Adair. He owned a head shop in Van Nuys, California, called Heads and Highs, since now called innocuously the H&H Shop. Because heads and highs, the word high was outlawed, the Constitution was overthrown, and they started passing paraphernalia laws, and weird crap was going on.
Yeah.
And so poor Ed couldn't keep his store under that title, so he had to change the title. So he kept the H and the H for heads and highs and went on as usual. He put up a big sign that you had to almost duck to get under that let you know that if you mentioned hash pipe, he couldn't sell to you anything. These things are all here for your tobacco and stuff like that.
Right.
You know, so because these were the forbidden words. Now here's a whole bunch of words that can get you busted or can get the store closed or will give the police an opportunity to use a subterfuge to be able to do what it is they're born to do, and I'm never quite clear what that is.
Yeah, that's their way of going around the First Amendment.
But that's because policing was turned into a job, too.
Yeah.
See, and that if it weren't a job and earning a living, a lot of things that people do daily, they'd refuse to do it out of a sense of moral indignation that even such a silly idea was out there in the land of the free and the home of the brave, in which you have to be damn brave in order to be free.
Yeah.
And I don't know anybody who's really free. Like I said, I think of it in terms of property rights.
Yeah.
You own it. And that's dealt with in a completely different way than this abstract word, liberty. What does it mean? Nobody has liberty, because that's license, you know?
Yeah.
So, and where do you draw the line? Because, absolutely, we don't want everybody having total liberty. We are, after all, a pack animal.
Yeah.
We're like the police dog, and we understand the leader principle. And we're not about to violate it.
Yeah.
The biggest and the strongest, the alpha in the group is going to run it.
Right, I was going to say, don't piss off the alpha dog.
That's right, and no matter who she is.
Yeah. I like that comment.
Okay, but back to Jack again. I love the guy. You know how it is when you meet certain people. Captain Ed was that way.
Yeah.
One night he approached. I mean, one time when I went in to get some screens, he came over and approached me as though he knew who I was, and invited me to a Halloween party they were holding a couple of nights away, after hours in the parking lot or something. And it sounded radical enough, so I went to it and got a chance to talk with Captain for a while. In those days, he was just Ed Adair. But along the way, he sort of earned the right to be the captain because people would steal from him and go get thrown in jail, and he'd go bail them out, you know, and give them their job back. And everybody would say, the hell are you up to, you know? And his basic answer was, I'll do anything to be the captain. And they, after
Amazing.
A while, they understood that he wasn't in for the money or for anything else. He just wanted to exert some leadership here. And he criticized me gravely over smoking tobacco. He said, you know, why should, you know, you won't be a leader if you don't know how to lead yourself, you know. And I thought, well, hell, I have no interest in being a damn leader. I just want to be left the hell alone to try and enjoy what I conceive of every single moment is a miracle.
Yeah.
You know, questions arise. Take water. Hydrogen, colorless, odorless. Oxygen, colorless, odorless. You put them together, and you can get wet. Where does the goddamn wet come from? You know, the wet. What is that? It's surface tension. You watch it like a rope going across the sand. It doesn't just spread out and soak in. It's got a destination, and its destination is down. How does he know where down is? You know, as a kid, I would find myself thinking about water. It is an insanely incredible substance. Same thing with fire. God, I can picture a fire in a fireplace saying, oh, God, feed me, feed me. Feed me, I'm suffocating, I'm dying, for God's sake.
Oh, it is alive.
Look at those drapes over there. I could, oh, God, turn me loose for a second and I'll be all over this guy.
You know, George, somebody would say...
I start writing dialogue for fire just by looking at it.
Sure.
It seems alive. It seems like it's got motivation. It seems like it's got desire and direction.
It does. Somebody would say you did too much LSD, George.
Yeah, I suppose so. It's mostly really a realization, though.
No, it's wonderful.
I truly am an animal.
It's wonderful that you can see into these things that the average person doesn't pay attention to and just goes, oh, it's just fire. No, it really is the insight.
They know what it is, and they know how to generate it.
Mm-hmm.
Ownership is another big thing. You know these book matches?
Yeah.
I've always got a pile of them in my pockets.
Yeah.
Because there's something to own. There's something that, this is mine.
Yeah.
A comic book used to be that very way because you could trade it. It had value. Somebody else would want to look at it. And you could swap your comic book for their comic book. At one time as a boy, we shot craps for comic books. We would actually go out with stacks of books, sit around for a half hour rattling the dice and throwing them against the wall, betting comic books. And the comic books turned it out to have value. So that when comics came along, I mean, an opportunity to celebrate comics came along with the Sheldorf's Comic-Con, I jumped aboard and quickly found out that I wasn't alone in my realization that one of the real great art forms of the world is the comics. And people like Jim Steranko and Frank Frazetta and, God, there's so many powerful, wonderful artists. Frank Bruner is another. Bill Stout is another. I apologize to all you guys for using your name in connection with him, in case you don't want anybody to know. You know, it's weird that I... You know Cool Hand Luke?
Yes.
He says, I have 20/20 vision, and everybody else is wearing bifocals. Boy, my heart leaped when he said that. Because I thought, God almighty, yes. Isn't it strange that what I know and can literally talk for hours about, they never heard of. They never heard of it. And then they're not even that interested, except that I've learned how to be interesting, literally by mostly changing the subject every minute or two.
Well, now, you said that you met him at Captain Ed's store. First of all,
I did. I met him there, and normally he would not have attracted me very much. He had a slightly belligerent attitude. There was something ready, he's ready to punch you out if you disagreed with him. And he was much younger in those days, as you know.
And he could punch people.
And he could punch people, right. And he also had a couple of things going for him. One was he was a scholar. Another was he was Jewish.
Yes.
Another thing was he was a rabble-rouser.
Yeah.
You know, he had certain energy levels he could go to. And then he would become the guy on the docks getting the goddamned people to join the damned union. You know, he was very fervent at that. And his subject matter was mostly psychedelics of one form or another.
Yeah.
Some of the things he's told me about mushrooms.
Fantastic.
He really knew a lot about Amanita muscaria and its relationship to cubensis. And
yes.
See, because when you hang out with a guy, and I would go to his house 3-4 days a week, and I would show up at 10 in the morning and hang out with him until he was gone, went to bed.
Yeah.
And often when he would take a nap in the middle of the day, I'd still be prowling around reading his books.
Fantastic library.
Fantastic person.
Absolutely.
To allow me
the
liberty to listen to all of his phone calls.
Yeah.
And the number of times he did a whole new lecture about the value of hemp and why they should become involved in it. He was a proselytizer. He formed the Reefer Raiders, which was an astonishing group of hardcore people who still are friends of his and consequently friends of mine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, and we do form a sort of an inner group society of people who through the years have put on initiatives and things to try to get people to do, I mean, they say no to alcohol. They say no to tobacco.
Yeah.
But what they say to pot, that's more than a no, man. It is you will die if you tell the truth about that.
Yeah.
You know, it's dangerous to proselytize for hemp because, my God, that's an invitation to have your trunk searched.
Yeah.
You know, or whatever. And if the cops stop me and say, if you got any pot or anything like that, they ask a direct question. I say, hell yeah, you know, and they say, well, would you give it to me? I give it to them, and I'm as friendly and nice about it as can be. I'm not, I understand they got a job, or at least they think they've got a job, and, but when it's all over, they give me the pot back and send me on my way. I have had the most miraculous luck when it came to evidence that could have caused me expense, you know, and time and effort, maybe liberty, who knows what. But all in the interest of telling the truth, all in the interest of seeing what really is there and not being prepared to identify it and not cover it up with language. It's so easy, you know, to say mistakes were made instead of I fucked up. You know, mistakes were made is innocuous. It doesn't pin you against the wall. But that other stuff does. And that's why the official language, it's so easy, you know, to, you know, it's, my mind is, of course, too active, and I think of 20 things at once. When I try to remember a title or a name of an actor, things start to flood in information. After a while, I can't see anything.
Yeah.
You know, I can't remember the names of actors. I can see his face in my mind, but I can't remember what he was called. And that's because it's so overlaid with other faces that are brought to mind because of the association factor. And it makes me into a quite creative person because I tend to want to look behind the curtain. I want to ask myself, and what else? You know, because there's got to be another what else after any answer to any question. There's got to be that thing that substitutes for why. Why? Well, this and this and this. Why? Well, this and this and this and this. But I'm really inordinately interested in the why. Motivation? You know, why did they do that? I mean, it doesn't seem rational that a person would go through all of that just for the purpose of getting himself shot.
Well, you know what?
At the very beginning, he's going to get himself shot.
I think having that attitude, though, keeps you young because isn't that what all little kids do when they start talking is mom and dad start saying stuff and the child's invariably always saying, why? But why? Why?
Right.
And if you can keep that attitude, it keeps you young.
It's an essential thing for kids.
Yes.
But they stamp it out in the schools.
Yeah.
Real quickly.
Yeah.
I can't get on my local school because it's all covered with barbed wire. You know, they've turned it into a concentration camp over there. It's very pretty behind that wire fence.
Yeah.
And those great big signs on every, all along that say prohibited and don't do this. And anyone found on these school grounds without authorization will be shot.
Yeah.
And I think, oh my God, what the hell is going on here? Used to be you could use this almost like a campus. You could come out here and have a friendly smoke,
yeah.
you know, on the school grounds when the kids weren't using it. I live across the street from one. So for me, that school ground is a easily identifiable place to meet people.
Yeah.
But no, it just suddenly turned into an armed camp.
What a wonderful society we've continued to grow here.
Well, it's deliberate.
Yeah.
I don't know. I suspect it goes slightly above the Council on Foreign Relations,
yeah.
who suddenly, for the first time in about 15 years, are starting to have opinions about this series of endless wars that we're involved in.
Yeah.
And you know that it's all stemming from that crowd of people who are real specialists in misinformation.
Absolutely.
And they have been, I would suspect, very close to the top of whoever our secret masters of the universe are, because they wouldn't be a secret if we knew.
Yeah.
We don't know who they are.
Well, that's one
we
of the...
We think it's corporate interests, but I think it's somewhere else above that.
Oh, I think the corporate is just the puppet for them. Well, you know, I think that's one of the things that I've admired about your work and folks that you've worked around, including Jack, of course, although his writing is a different type of writing, but exposing through the propaganda and busting through that. And I think that's the work of sci-fi and the work that you've done and folks like yourself.
What I've tried to do?
Yes.
I've tried to give people permission to think in other categories.
Yeah.
We all know the familiar list of categories that occupy our minds. You know, job, family, church.
Yeah.
But now, what about other categories? Here's a question for you. What if we all only had one hand? Well, for one thing, there would be no more peanut butter jars, because you cannot open a peanut butter jar with one hand.
I found that out the hard way.
But you see how the whole world is transformed. And so when you look at it and you say, well, why are things the way they are? It's because we have come to learn that we are the way we are, you know, and yet you realize also that we're just bumbling infants, 200 years old country.
Yeah.
I mean, civilization, what a joke.
Yeah.
My God, we are in a state of pre-civilization.
Yeah.
You know, civilization will come after the internet begins to be something other than a means to sell pornography. You know, it's...
yeah.
I mean, isn't that what started it? I mean, God bless those people. They are the ones who made the internet possible.
Probably.
Without it,
yeah.
there would be no commercial interest to it,
yeah.
and nobody would be interested in it because there's no money in it.
Yeah.
And right now, everyone's frustrated because they cannot figure ways to monetize it.
Yeah.
How can I take the fact that now I don't need a distributor and can distribute things myself to make my name big enough in the catalog that I'll get some customers?
Yeah.
And so you think of a trick name for your website, but still in all, you've got to find a way to advertise it, which takes you back down the tree to television or magazines or newspapers or radio or other means to let people know that you even exist.
Yeah.
Because if they only knew that you existed and that your product existed, you'd become wealthy and they would become happy.
Yeah, I know you know who Pink Floyd is, of course.
Yes,
and Roger Waters, the former bass player, on his solo album of 1992 called Amused to Death, my favorite line in the whole album is from the song It's a Miracle. And the line, of course, the chorus line is, by the grace of God Almighty and the pressures of the marketplace, the human race has civilized itself.
I love his chaos, Radio Chaos.
I do, too.
That song on there, The Tide is Turning?
Yes, the last song.
That is totally moving.
Wonderful.
Because I feel
agree.
That the tide is turning.
I
feel
agree.
That there are enough people like you out there spreading the word, willing to perhaps get some ridicule because of your interest in psychedelics and the vast good that they have done and will continue to do
society. That's right.
And God, can you put me in jail for saying we really ought to give it to the kids? I mean, they need it the most.
Another one of my heroes, along with yourself, is Dr. Leary. Another big hero of mine.
Yeah, I got to know Dr. Tim. In fact,
wonderful.
For a while there, it looked like we were going to collaborate on something, because he has a cousin who works at William Morris.
Huh.
A guy named Pierre.
I'm so sorry you didn't get to do that.
And Pierre was his agent, so that at a certain point, we were brought together to talk. And I think it was my fault, because we were starting to get near some very interesting territory talking together. But he had this annoying habit of not talking back, responding to me, but making a comment to his friend.
I believe that.
He'd look at his friend and say, things are getting a little tense in here, aren't they? Instead of saying, why are you pressing me like that? Or something, you know? And after a while, his just failure to encounter, which usually strips away the crap if you're just a little rude to each other.
Yeah.
But you need each other.
Yeah.
So you negotiate a bit. That's always a better way for people to come to terms with each other. But anyway, he was avoiding it, and of course he picked that up by being chased all over the world and held by the FBI and
interrogated
and got to the point where encounter was just totally dangerous.
Yeah.
So even if he disagreed with you, he'd have to find some ironic or amusing to him way to communicate his failure to or whatever.
Yeah.
But it ticked me off because at the moment it just seemed to me in the way of what we were trying to do, which was to come to an understanding about a potential concept for a thing that could make us both very rich,
yeah,
if Pierre liked it and if we could find the right market for it. Because between the two of us, we really constituted a brain trust. He was totally educated.
Yeah.
He went through the system right up through Harvard and everywhere. He was a professor of half a dozen things. But it turns out that I'm they got a special name for it, adjunct.
Yes.
I am an adjunct professor at 3 universities.
Wow.
One in Washington and 2 in California. And I look and I think, I haven't a smidgen of education, as they term it. I'm strictly homegrown. My older brother taught me to read.
Wow.
Out of the book, The Emerald City of Oz.
Wow.
It was the first book I ever looked at over his shoulder, as with his finger he traced the words and showed me what he was reading out loud.
Wow.
And after a while I was noticing the ands, or the does, or the as. And then before long it became clear to me that those words really did represent things. And on the first page of the Emerald City of Oz, this king, a gnome king, is angry, and he's furious. And his servant is upset by his nervousness, and he's trying to explain why he's angry. He's angry because he misses his magical belt. It turns out that Dorothy took his magical belt to the Emerald City, and they've got it there. And he's all the way across this vast desert, and there's no way without dying that you can cross this desert to get to his magical belt, until the idea comes to build a tunnel to go all the way to the Emerald City for him to get his magical belt back. Well, that word magical belt is an unusual-looking pair of words. And after a few moments, I got it. That's magical belt. And then there it was again. And there it was again. And there it was again. And halfway through the book, there it is again. And so I knew almost overnight that this story was about the magical belt. Anyway, my brother taught me to read. And if it weren't for reading, I wouldn't have the trivium, which is basically grammar, which is reading, logic, which is, does all of this make sense? Does it hold together? Does one fact contradict another? You know, is there something in here you know to be wrong?
Yeah.
Is he lying to me? What's that shifty look? You know, something's fishy here. All those points are all dealt with in logic. And then there's rhetoric, which is defending your ideas, standing up for yourself, telling the judge why you crossed the street that way, rather than just cringe. And so when you've got those three, the trivium they called them back in the holy days, 14th, 15th century and all that, in order to get your kid into a university, he had to be semi-educated. So you would hire a tutor to teach him the trivium, because then he could appear to be a young gentleman. And he would know how to talk to his superiors. And he would know how to stop shifting from foot to foot, or how to make those gestures that meant he was sincere. And he would learn that because the tutor would teach him the trivium. Now, if they would have just kept that system, we would really be smart today. But for various reasons, they got rid of the importance of those three.
Yeah.
And if you add ethics to those three, then you got a good, perfect person. If you leave the ethics off, then you just got a good businessman. So,
yeah.
Back to good old Captain Ed and Jack Herer. Jack became a source of total entertainment to me day after day after day. Anytime he'd come to town, first place he'd call is here.
Yep.
He'd pick me up and he'd take me to every head shop that he wanted to visit. He introduced me again and again and again. And every time he did, he would start to brag to people about who I was.
Yep.
Which embarrassed me because I really did not want a full-scale introduction, because part of my game is being invisible until I want to be visible.
Right.
To be just a common another guy loitering around. Until he starts to talk, you'll have no idea that dude over there could be George Clayton.
Well, Johnson. See, I disagree with that. Even if I didn't know who you were, I would have still thought you were one of the coolest guys I ever met, because I was very fortunate, like you say, that what Jack would do when he got to L.A. was call you and pick you up, and I was with him numerous times when I traveled with him out in California to be able to be a part of that when he picked you up, and I'll tell you, it's been the highlights of my life, as well as the highlights of spending time with Jack, is spending time with you, and matter of fact, if you remember, you gave me the tour at the H&H shop when you and I and Jack was there, and I got the tour of the back room with you, and you told me the history of the seat of the hemp movement that was created and started out of the back room at that store.
It's really true. That
That
head shop was a gathering place for a group of people, many of whom are dear friends today, and I see from time to time. Wonderful. And the main connection we have is that Captain Ed liked us, wanted us around him. And so we ended up, same thing with Jack Herer. I wasn't the only person that Jack was friends with.
No.
You know, he introduced me again and again, like to you.
Yes.
I mean, how astonished I was when Jack shows up with a young lady in the car.
Wow.
Not only a young lady, but he's brought her across state lines and all. I mean, God knows what the hell's going on here. And at the same time, I thought, how appealing, how smart, and also just how brave on your part. Because truly, you were learning something really important. And you must have already had your heart really into it.
Absolutely.
In order to become aroused about in Jack's circus, you know?
Yeah.
But he did that with people. And I kept meeting new drivers, new people who were taking him wherever he wanted to go.
Yes.
And I saw how frail he was becoming.
Yes.
After the stroke, he started to come apart pretty fast.
Yes.
Before that, he really would stand his ground and be prepared to dust you off if you tried to mess with him.
Yeah.
You know, he was a real roughneck. But another thing that was really strong about him was his being, on the one hand, a scholar.
Yeah.
And especially a scholar of Judaism and all of its history.
Yes.
Because Jack was a Jew, and he did not try to make any secret of that.
Yes.
And he would whip it out at any moment. And guys like me who were Christians, you know, who think Jesus was a great guy, to him, I am a fool because I don't understand what's really going on. They have put one over on me.
Yeah.
You know, because of my, I guess I'm an existentialist hippie. I'm a Christian. I believe that Jesus is the Son of God, for example. But then so do I think I am, too.
Right.
That helps me to get the language straight.
Yeah.
Because we're all children of God.
Yes.
And that without that instrument in place, we none of us would be here, intelligent, coherent things that we are. The universe is just too damned orderly, too vast, too big.
Yeah.
And they talk about light being the fastest thing in the universe. But has anybody really tried to calculate what's going on when one of those omega alpha waves come bashing through the universe, coming from some distant explosion that engulfs a dozen galaxies, and that sends out a wave of energy that just lashes, and it only lasts for a goddamn few instants?
Yeah.
But whack, you just went through one of these fields.
Yeah.
Is it traveling at the speed of light? I doubt it very much.
Yeah.
You know, I think that this is an infinite thing. It goes up forever, getting tinier and tinier and higher and tighter, and there's always another piece beyond that. And same thing with going down lower and getting colder as it goes along. The whole idea of it is infinity. And the mind, the human mind, just cannot really get a handle on that word.
That's right.
We cannot conceive of anything without limit. you know, even myself as a line between here and heaven, somehow in my mind.
Yeah.
Although we're probably living in heaven right now, and we're probably condemned here. This may be a prison plan for
Could very well be. Well, I hope not. Well, George, listen, I wish we could talk forever today, but we're going to cut this and we're going to save the other half for next Monday. Would you be available next Monday to finish up with us?
I have Mondays clear.
Wonderful.
Tuesday, I have a difficulty with that, but
yes.
Mondays, I'm okay.
Yes, and we'll talk about that next Monday on what you're doing on Tuesdays with Logan's Run and stuff.
Okay, but, I'll mark it on my calendar.
Absolutely. Now, one of the things I do have to get out of here because we have another show coming up, but I want to mention to folks, of course, this is George Clayton Johnson, Jack Hare's best friend, and of course, well-known for being one of the best sci-fi writers ever, Twilight Zone, Star Trek, even Alfred Hitchcock and Logan's Run, Ocean's 11, lots of other works, and I want to talk more with George next week, not only about Jack and the early days with Captain Ed and the stuff going on in California, but of course his works and what he would like to see happening in the world. But one of the things I want to add also is for folks, this is one of the things that I like to say, George, about Jack, because you do mention that he is Jewish, and I am as well, and so I kind of feel like myself and people like myself might have a little bit more of an edge in understanding where Jack's mind comes from. And it's really funny. One of the things that I like to tell people that they should do so they can know where Jack came from is to watch Fiddler on the Roof. Jack,
yeah,
he's like a modern-day Tevye.
He'd be perfect for that.
Wouldn't he be great to play Tevye?
He would be perfect for playing that Fiddler on the Roof.
Yes. It's just, and, you know, he would break out in song like they did in the movie, so, and just like that. I can just see Jack singing, you know, the songs from the movie, and it just gives you an idea of where his culture comes from. And
well, we share something. We both love the man.
Yes, we do.
And it's a damn shame that he's not around to continue to lead us.
I agree.
He really did have a... he was special.
He was a rabble-rouser, that's for sure, as you said.
Yeah, and thank God.
Yes.
Because now there's people all over the globe very interested in trying to solve this question of what do you mean drug?
Yeah.
What do you mean medicine?
Yeah.
You call it a medicine, it's okay now.
Yeah.
You know, medicine. My God, yes, and they'll let you go in a minute if some doctor says you should be taking it.
That's right.
Why?
That's right.
Because we're a lockstep nation, and God, these systems we use for making any kind of decision at all, they're all adversarial.
Yeah,
I've been working
up
for years on a thing I call synergistic convergence.
Wow.
And it's a new way of structuring decision systems, using the internet, of course, using a lot of cameras.
Yeah. Well, let's talk more about that next Monday. Stay on the line. I want to go ahead and get our out song together, and I want to talk to you for a minute offline. So hang on the line here for just a minute, and I will be right back. Of course, this is George Clayton Johnson on Hemp Rock Radio. I am the Happy Hemptress, and apologize for running just a little bit late on the show, and I'm not sure if Jay's coming up next on the recordings or not, but stay tuned, of course, for all the other great shows here at WVQC, LP Cincinnati, and of course 95.7 FM in Cincinnati, and 95.7 that is, and of course WVQC.org. I'm the Happy Hemptress. I want to again thank my very, very special guest, George, and of course, happy birthday, Jack. We love you and we miss you. We'll be back I'll be back tomorrow in the studio here live. And of course, back with George next week. I'm the Happy Hemptress. We'll see you next week as well as tomorrow.
This has been the Monday edition of Hemp Rock Radio with the Happy Hemptress, the Burn Man, and the Potsberry Dope Boy Pot and Hash. Speaking for the legalization of marijuana. Hemp Rock Radio airs Mondays and Tuesdays from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern on WVQC LP. Find Hemp Rock Radio archives at weedradionetwork.com.
Watch Hemp Rock TV on Northern Kentucky's Insight Cable Channel 21, Cincinnati's Time Warner Cable Channel 4 and 24, and now online at weedradionetwork.com.
You can join the Hemp Rockers list at HempRock.com and the Hemp Rock Hemp Line at 513-684-HEMP. That's 513-684-HEMP. to help end Cincinnati's harmful marijuana ordinance, please visit CincinnatiMarijuanaLaw.com. That's CincinnatiMarijuanaLaw.com. Hemp Rock Radio, the Pottsbury Bakery, and Hemp Rock Cafe are brought to you by Hemp Rock Productions. Thanks for listening to Hemp Rock Radio and Radio Free Queen City, a member of Media Bridges Community Media Center on 95.7 FM WVQC-LP Cincinnati. WVQC-LP broadcasts from Cincinnati's Computer Cooperative Studios. You can listen online, become a member, and support the station at WVQC.org. Coming up next on WVQC-LP is Jay All Day with Cincinnati's Conscience, where hippie meets the hood.
I wanna get high.